Reflections of the Dhamma by Ian McCrory. As a teacher of patience and tolerance, the Buddha was a failure. He did not make promises. He did not make problems for us. He did not wish to harm us. He did not bear us ill will. It is our enemies of the internal and external kind who provide us with the opportunity to grow in patience and tolerance. Be thankful to those who hurt us, for they place the Dhamma before us. We just need to open our eyes. We are here to be a burden to one another. It is Ian McCrory. He spells his last name McCrorie. He wrote a book called The Moon Appears When the Water is Still. And it's reflections on the Dhamma. It's a lot of Zen stories, I think. There's Zen reflections. And I think that was just a Zen reflection. But I love it. What we're going to talk about. The idea that Buddha was a failure at anything doesn't make any sense, does it? It's a little striking, but he actually was a failure when it comes to patience and tolerance. We're going to get that from everything else, not from Buddha. So, good. Alrighty. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about, I'm going to do this week and I'm going to do next week. And usually our team gets together the month before and we talk about everything we're going to talk about and who's going to talk about what and how we're going to approach the subject, and it gets all filled out and it's full. And I missed that. I missed the meeting. I didn't get to hear what people said. So now, you're just going to have to hear boundaries from the way I see it, how I've come to understand boundaries. And since I'm going to do this week and next week, I thought this week I would talk about the body and what boundaries have to do with the body. And next week we're going to talk about the mind and boundaries in the mind. Because I think we have to make a distinction between practicing with boundaries and the more psychological way we deal with the idea of healthy boundaries. So I want to talk about boundaries and how practice support us in boundaries. And you know, I like having some kind of little story to go along with it. And I tried to find a story on boundaries and yeah, they were just not working. And then I stumbled upon this Dr. Brenna Brown. You may know her. I don't know. But she talks a lot about vulnerability. And I have a little clip that I want to share with her, because I think that clip is the perfect way to start thinking about how to practice with boundaries with the body. Because the body is the perfect place to practice boundaries. And it is not the place to practice boundaries in the world outside. It's the place to practice understanding the nature of boundaries within us and what that means. So let me start our little discussion here with this clip from Brenna, Dr. Brown here.
So I think the biggest myth about vulnerability is that it's weakness. I think a lot of people were raised to believe that. It was modeled, I think, certainly in our culture. We see that a lot, that to be vulnerable, to be open, to be exposed is to be weak. And the truth is, you know, what I found in my research is that vulnerability is not weakness. In fact, I would argue that it's our greatest measure of courage. when we went out and asked people, what is vulnerability? We heard things like, vulnerability is the first date after my divorce. Vulnerability is starting my own company. Vulnerability is taking responsibility for something that went wrong at work. Vulnerability is sitting with my wife who has stage 3 breast cancer and making plans for our young kids. Vulnerability is taking my business public. You know, the definition I use in my work of vulnerability is simply uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Vulnerability is about the willingness to show up and to be seen even when there are no guarantees. And it's interesting to me. I mean, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, I gave a talk, it's probably a couple of years now, and it was being translated by people doing American Sign Language. And they came up before the talk started, and they said, are there any words that you're going to use a lot in your talk that we should, you know about that or might be different? And I said, well, I use the word vulnerability a lot. And they kind of, there were two of them, they kind of looked at each other and they said, oh, we do this for vulnerability. And I said, what does that mean? They said, it means weak in the knees. And I'm like, wow, that's not how I talk about vulnerability. And she said, well, there's only one other sign for vulnerability. And I said, what is it? And she said, and I said, oh, that's what I'm talking about. And so to me, vulnerability is our most accurate measure of courage. I mean, it's pretty powerful when I have 13,000 pieces of data collected over 12 years that I cannot find a single incident or story of courage that was not completely underpinned by vulnerability. I think the problem arises that there's so many little paradoxes with vulnerability, and one of them is that vulnerability is courage in you, but weakness in me. When I meet you, it's the first thing I look for in you, but it's the last thing I want to show you in me. And so I think to really put ourselves out there, knowing that if we do that enough, we're going to fail, I just don't think it gets more courageous than that.
So we can't talk about boundaries in practice without having a degree of respect for the felt sense of vulnerability. It is inherent in boundaries. It's almost like that willingness to feel that uncomfortability is what allows us to know a boundary exists here. Another way I can think of vulnerability is stretching our boundaries to a safer spaciousness for trust. So in order for us to trust more and more and more and more and more, we need to know where the lines are that are keeping us contained. And that containment is where I think our line of vulnerability comes. So if we think about this in relation to practice, I think all practice is designed to help us know suffering. No harm is a better way to say it. To know the harm I'm causing you, to know the harm I'm causing myself, and to know the harm that I'm causing both of us. To know this, to recognize it and see it, we usually don't see harm, because what we see is our own desires, our own wants, our own likes. That's what we see as a normal, habitual mind. Because when you have a mind that's designed to protect us, it only sees what it likes and what it wants. And so anything that feels good to me, that's where I'm going. That's what I'm doing. And anybody that's in the way, it's going to cause me to feel unpleasant, and they're the problem. I got to get that fixed so I can keep on moving with the everything is right, everything is good. And the problem is that every single being on this planet is doing the exact same thing. Every animal, every plant, every human, every insect, every fish, every bird, every being is trying to move in a way that most makes it happy. And anything that disrupts that is in the way. And that process creates within it a necessary bumping into each other, a necessary creating of harm. So as practitioners, we want to see that bumping into each other, that burdenness that we bring to each other, and see it so that we can learn to see through the boundaries of non-harm, kindness, and restraint that is a way to move through the world in a blameless way. That's what we're doing as practitioners. There's this whole level of discussion around healthy boundaries in relation to being in situations where it's not safe, or it's difficult, or it's codependent, or it's sticky and messy. And how do we psychologically deal with, I grew up in a codependent family. So my biggest problem was not being codependent on every single guy I ever dated. And believe me, it was difficult because my go-to energy was to be all enmeshed in their world, and they had to be all enmeshed in mine, and we had to think and walk as one, or we weren't really in love with each other. And that didn't really work. It never worked. So I spent all this time psychologically trying to unhook myself from this codependent, psychosomatic way of living, habitual way of living. And there is that whole body of wisdom. And part of what I think Dr. Brown is pointing to is that kind of psychosomatic kind of way of living. But that is not what I think practice is pointing to around boundaries. What I think practice is pointing to is less about, am I codependent with someone out there? And more about, what is the constraints I'm having in here, in me, going on with me and my world? And where am I not seeing my own harm? And where am I being unkind and have ill will when I could be kind? And where am I not allowing for just a basic restraint in my existence into the space? That kind of awareness is what I think practice points to. That's the kind of boundaries. So how do we see that? The physical body is our doorway into seeing our own boundaries. You can tell when a boundary has come up because you don't feel pleasant. That right there, this felt sense of something's wrong, right there, there is a boundary that you are at. And that boundary is either the felt sense of somebody encroaching on you with harm, or you pushing against the world with harm. But that felt sense of unpleasantness is a telltale sign that there's a boundary here. What we're trying to see, is this a boundary where I am pushing against the world to get my own way and I'm causing harm? Or is this a boundary where someone is causing harm, and it is actually my sensitivity to harm that's helping me see that something is amiss here? I can see it. I can feel it in the body. So we're learning to become more and more and more and more sensitive to harm on purpose. We are not trying to practice our way to practice to a point of where we're desensitized to harm. and we don't feel that pain of harm anymore. I can't tell you how many practitioners will come to me and they're asking me, the world is so painful. How do I close in so I don't feel all this pain? It's overwhelming. And I am constantly pointing to people that there's a boundary here in relation to pain in the world that's your pain and others' pain. And we're trying to see pain and know the distinction between where is the pain that I'm causing and the pain that exists because the world is in pain. And in that, we want to be able to just acknowledge the existence of that pain. But I think the overwhelm comes from constantly trying to fix and right the wrongs. This constant need to fix everything so there's no more pain. And that's not where this practice is pointing to. This practice is not, that's actually against the Dhamma. Because the Dhamma is this acknowledgement that pain exists in the world. It exists in the world always. It will forever exist in the world. We will not have an existence without someone experiencing pain. Because we are rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. So as practitioners, if we are trying to find the utopian world that doesn't have us feeling any pain, we are going the opposite direction. What we are doing as practitioners is learning to recognize that pain, to see where in this pain am I rubbing up against the boundary of right intention. To do no harm, to be as kind as I can, and to live a life of restraint. So when you start feeling this difficulty, some struggle, some uneasiness, we don't want to look outside to fix whatever's out there. We want to look inside and see what has been triggered within this eightfold path that we are struggling up against and resolve it. I want to read one more thing from Ian, and then we'll take a moment to kind of talk with each other about what boundaries in this way. The only difficulty with Ian is he doesn't actually have any titles to any of his reflections, so you have to just kind of find it. Here it is. This is one. Life is like bailing a boat with a hole in it. No matter how fast we work, no matter how large our pail, no matter how many friends help us, water continues to pour in. But what if we accept the fact that our boat has a hole in it, and sooner or later it will sink? We continue to bail with the hope of stemming the water, but because bailing is the stuff of life. Now freed of the craving to solve the tragedy of our existence, we can turn our eyes to the heavens above and bask in the wonder and joy of the futility of it all. Don't worry, things will get worse. I love that. The point I think this is about is If we are constantly setting boundaries to create a world where we don't have so many difficulties, then we're constantly creating the very boundaries that will ensure we will have constant difficulties. Instead, we're trying to create a world where the boundaries show us where we are craving against reality and free ourselves from that clinging to step into reality. That's what these boundaries, I think, in practice are designed for. Let's see. I think that's what I wanted to share about the body. So today we're going to talk about how much are you willing to let the body's pain, difficulty, struggle actually tell you that you're up against your own practice boundaries? How much are you willing to let that difficulty help you see that versus use that difficulty as a way to push further against reality to fix the problem out there? And how appreciative are you that your body actually gives you a warning signal to tell you that you are pushing against reality by actually allowing you to feel suffering and feel sad and to feel worried and to feel anxious and all that stuff we feel, you know, all the tingling, all the pressure, all the stuff that's going on from our physical body is speaking more to what's going on with you and your relationship with the moment than it is about the moment itself. So that's what I'd like us to just contemplate a little bit. And we're going to do this by going into breakout rooms. And so to give everybody that's going to be in a breakout room an opportunity to kind of get your thoughts together, I'll build the breakout rooms, and anyone that wants to bow out can say goodbye, and I'll begin to build these rooms. All right, so we're just going to see, just take a moment to think about what does it mean if every difficulty really is pointing back to you and it's really a sign that you are pushing against reality, and the boundary is not the fixing of the difficulty, but letting go of what it is that you're clinging to or craving that's against reality. And see what kind of, there's no right or wrong answer. So it's just a matter of seeing what comes up in the group, listening to each other, and seeing what comes from it. All right? All right. So I'll call you back in just about 15 minutes. Well, let's see if anybody would like to, you know, share a comment or two before we close out, or if you have a question or anything like that about what you're thinking about boundaries. I mean, you guys have been through most of the month, so I don't even know how this relates to how the month unfolded, but I'm pretty sure it's probably close. Oh, you can't undo yourself? Hold on a minute. Let me double check. Fix that. Yeah, you should be able to unmute.
Yeah. I was able to unmute. I'll raise my hand and share, okay, because I did have a question.
Sure.
So talking about the body and then these boundaries and vulnerability, I was trying to kind of put it together. And I do Qigong, and my teacher says head, heart, hara. And when I focus on those three things in that order, head, heart, hara, I really feel a difference in each location. And I can see that there are, I have a lot of boundaries in my head, and there's a lot of comparing and going on, and it's usually kind of a feeling of a tangle. And then when I move that to my heart, I just feel this totally different sense. And it feels less divided. So for me, it feels like there are fewer boundaries there, but it also feels vulnerable. You know, like you were saying, it's very susceptible to movement. It seems like it's moving, whereas my head feels contracted like this. And then when I move to the hara, which is the belly, it's very neutral. You know, it's very just resting and spacious. So the way I see stretching my boundaries to get a spaciousness and trust, it feels like I need to move from my head to my heart to my belly and feel that variation, and that I can be more spacious with when I move to my heart. Now, you know, if somebody's being mean to me, that might be a different thing, but that's not what right now, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like I can connect. I can feel the humanness. Like Brene Brown said, the first thing I look for in you is that vulnerability, and it's the last thing I want to show you in me. And that's my normal, stance.
Right.
But I see that I really need to include my heart and body if I do want to become spacious. So I guess I was wondering what you meant about the connection between the body and the boundaries and the vulnerability.
So the way you're describing this is what I'm pointing to. Next week, we're going to talk about the head boundaries. So we're not really talking about the head boundaries here. But the more we're able to drop into our bodies and feel the push, the more we're able to create spaciousness and learn what our levels of vulnerability are. The mind is usually operating out of distorted understandings of the moment. So that's a different thing. What I'm pointing to today is the feeling of being uncomfortable, that feeling of being nervous about something, scared about something, that feeling of vulnerability. That is where we want to learn to see that feeling is not a sign that something's wrong, which is what the mind will immediately tell us. It's learning to get comfortable with that feeling of nervousness and scare. You know, Lauren, if I can pick on you a moment, even when we first started Yes. doing these sitting groups, when we first started doing Sunday mornings and you were so nervous, it's like I knew your practice from the ways you would respond to many of the questions you asked in regular Monday night sits. And you had so much wisdom, but you didn't know that. And so when it came time to get in front of the group and talk, you'd be nervous and scared. But that vulnerability is... it's sort of like if you believe that vulnerability and that felt sense of discomfort in the body is telling you the truth about the outside moment, then you would never have ever spoke, because it's not telling you, it's just showing you where you have a push against reality. So reality is Tim and I had all this confidence in you, but you were pushing against that reality. When you finally let yourself kind of open to the felt sense of nervousness and inch on into it, then your level of discomfort gets less and less. It doesn't mean like you don't have any discomfort every time you get ready to talk. I have discomfort every time I get ready to talk. But the discomfort is not telling me something's wrong as much as I trust that discomfort to tell me, pay attention. It's more like that. So the discomfort we feel in the body, we are learning to see that that discomfort as practitioners is telling us where we are clinging against reality. It is not telling us what is going wrong.
That's really important to me. I kind of missed that. So thank you.
Yeah. So that's what we're, as practitioners, we're, the go-to energy is, but what if somebody's being mean to me? You will know that clearly straight away. But mostly this discomfort is not about anyone being mean to us. Mostly this discomfort is just our own vulnerability in the moment. And that is what we are allowing the mind, where we're going to go next week, to tell us what to do. And instead, we are practitioners. We are learning to relax into that discomfort to see where I'm clinging and where I'm pushing against reality first, before we look outward to see what needs to be done.
Thank you.
Welcome. Leah, did you have a question? You can't unmute? What in the world? None of you guys? What in the world? Okay, so you raise your hand.
I can unmute.
I think, I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to unmute you. I'm going to ask you to unmute here. And then if anybody else that wants to share can just raise their hand and I'll ask you to unmute. Yeah.
I don't know if I had a question, just
a comment?
Yeah, just really appreciating this talk. I think in the last year, I've really started to understand about, you talked about blamelessness. I really appreciated that word. Just starting to understand how much pain I cause myself, a lot, mostly myself, in the way that I fight reality and I fight the moment, every single moment, and just how exhausting that is and has mm-hmm. been my whole life. I'm just exhausted.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really ready to not cause myself any more exhaustion. I don't want to say to not be exhausted. I mean, it's part of life, right? So I don't want to resist being exhausted, but the causing, you know, through the blaming and the fighting, I'm causing a lot of suffering. And I think it's just amazing to finally be here and say, oh, I see it. I feel it. And now what? So I'm curious about next week's talk because I'm an overthinker and I'm up here all the time.
Yep.
I have to bring it down. I have to keep bringing it back down to my body and my heart, and just because my mind wants to fix everything. Everybody else's life, my life, the world. So this is a really wonderful, very simple way of putting it. And it's a complex thing because the mind is involved, right?
It is. I think the reason why I started with the body is because oftentimes we feel discomfort, and that's what triggers the mind to start planning how we're going to fix everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if we can get into the mantra, the remembering, the practicing is not to get rid of the suffering. We are practicing to learn to turn first to see where we're clinging before we turn outward to deal with whatever's bothering us. Just
right.
Where am I clinging? I learned that 95% of the time that almost 99%. I even remember one time, 99% of the time It is my clinging that's causing the difficulty and not the thing I think is the problem out there. Once I let go of the clinging, whatever that was, most of the stuff in life is less, it's, I don't care, really. You know, it's mostly like that. And the first time I saw this, Rodney gave a talk one time. I can't remember what it was on, but he gave us this challenge to do something different. I can't remember how he put it. And we were supposed to, I think it was either practice being still with something or something like that. We were supposed to do over the week in our homework. And so I decided that as a trial lawyer, prosecutor, you go into every morning, you start having to negotiate cases with defense attorneys. And it's always contentious and it's always difficult. It's always, and of course, it's all them that's wrong all the time. And I'm always right. And so let's just don't get it twisted here. So I vowed that my practice was going to be that whatever anyone said for the first 5 minutes of our getting together, first 5 minutes, I was not going to challenge one iota of it. I was going to listen to it and take it in, and I would not do any kind of pushback until after 5 minutes. I'm telling you, that's the best week I ever had. I cannot believe it. So when I got to that Monday night with Rodney again, I said, or Tuesday night, whenever we met, I was like, are you saying that I'm the reason, I'm the problem between our discussions? That's what it seems like, right? If Tuareg settles down for the first 5 minutes, we all get along. So clearly I'm the one that's wrong. But no, what Rodney said was, if I settle down, I create the space to see the moment as it truly is and not as the mind's habitual reactivity. So that's what was happening. It only takes one person in a moment to see the moment as it truly is and change the whole dynamic of the relationship. And so I just happened to have been the person to see the moment as it truly is. And when I calm down, it gives space for everybody else to calm down. That's what was happening.
So thank you again for coming. And it's hard to remember our Donna when in this Zoom world, you know, when we're in person and there are those lovely little baskets and you walk by them. And if you can imagine the baskets, the virtual basket, and it's really easy to keep supporting the teachings and the teacher and our lovely organization, Seattle Insights. So I encourage you to be generous in a way that feels right for you. Yep. And in closing, what a beautiful day this has been this morning of sharing the Dharma and being vulnerable with each other. And may the merit of this practice be of benefit for all of us here today, for those in our larger communities, and for all beings everywhere.
Thank you all so much for coming. We'll have part two next week and see what happens with the mind. So have a lovely week, and I'll see you. Have a lovely Thanksgiving. I'll see you all next week.